Hello, my name is Bill Tilley, and my favorite thing is coming up with my next favorite thing.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and it is Sunday, July 31st, and I'm sending you my apologies for missing last week. Sometimes I'm surprised what takes it out of me and when I lose my editing mojo for the week. And last week was just one of those weeks. Luckily, my guest this week, Bill Tilley, is a patient man. And we recorded and he has been calmly waiting for this episode to come out. So I appreciate that. In the last week, I drove up to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota while I have gotten at last a clean bill of health regarding cancer. So my mammogram was clear. My bone biopsy was clear. I'm still weak in a weird way from chemotherapy that kind of flummoxes my doctors. So I went up to the Mayo Clinic for a second opinion and I'll go back again in a couple weeks. So I might see if I can get some guest hosts in or just actually take a few weeks off. I'm interviewing someone this afternoon, so there'll for sure be an episode next week, and then I will decide if I just need to take a break and come back in September or October. I'm headed to Israel at the end of the month. Going to take all my podcasting equipment and hopefully record some episodes while I'm there with friends who live in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. I'm not really sure. So after my last episode where I interviewed Matt about Deadwood, I'm halfway through the second season of Deadwood, which I thought like I would watch the pilot for that episode and then be good to go. And then I watched all of season one in a week. This weekend I started watching season two. So I'm fully hooked into Deadwood and so that's where my TV watching has taken me this week. So that is just my brief hello. This week I'm talking to Bill Tilley. He is the social media director for the Greatest Generation podcast, co-host of Bill and Rob's An Excellent Adventure with Rob Schulte, who we met a few weeks ago. And it's just a really fun conversation about using his imagination, finding his next favorite thing, and being an active fan in different fandoms and podcast fandoms. So we had a lot of fun. So enjoy this conversation with Bill Tilley. Get your boosters, wear your mask, wash your hands, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and we get recommendations without using an algorithm. I am so pleased to be joined this week with the other half of Bill and Rob's Excellent Adventure, Bill Tilley. Bill is a podcaster and he's also the social media director for the podcast Greatest Generation, and we were introduced to each other by his co-host, Rob Schulte. So, Bill, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Leah. How are you?
I'm good. Like I said, I took a lot of naps today in various rooms of a doctor's office. So I'm trying to shake it off with a lemonade from Sonic.
So my best nap story that I will give you is I remember I was in high school. And I never napped as a kid, never. My dad would. He was an over-the-road truck driver, so you see him do this all the time. I came home one day and fell asleep and didn't quite know I had fallen asleep. Just kind of lose track of time, one of those naps. And when I looked up, the clock said 7:30, and I was convinced that somehow I had slept the entire night, and it was the next day, and I was about to miss school. And so the only way I could figure out what time it was I had run into the living room and it was really bright. And I'm like, this is awful bright for 7:30 in the morning. And I turned on the TV and Wheel of Fortune was on. And that's the only way I knew. I was right back
in it. Ajax saved you.
Yeah. As usual, You'll find out. TV, big help for me in life. That's really a crutch I lean on. So TV lessons, all that stuff. It's good.
Yeah. I my house is now sort of the same way, where some of the only clocks I have, you know, a microwave and kitchen and like stove clock. Those are always blinking 12. Just constantly. Unless a friend comes over and it's too stressful for them to see my blinking 12 clocks and they fix it. And then it's just like my computer and my phone. And sometimes I also get like a hard nap, and you wake up and you're like, is it? I texted someone the other night. I was certain I'd slept through like greatest night sleep. And I woke up at 11 p.m.
That's just.
And that was very disappointing.
Yeah, that's crushing. We are remodeling my house, me and my fiance, and she has taken a lot of the clocks that were here down, which is not really a big deal for me, except for one in the hallway. It's always the one I look to. And to this, I still have a reflex twitch when I go to look for it. So, but in college, I stayed in the High Stadium. I went to High State University, and I actually lived in the stadium. They had dormitories in there then.
Right.
And I lived in a room with no windows for 9 months. So,
nope,
that didn't work out too well at all. So,
I like to have at least one classes. Did you sleep through the whole semester? Like, how did you get anywhere with no sunlight?
Well, that proved to be a real problem. Plus, I had been one of those kids. I was a pretty good kid coming through. You know, I hadn't really acted out or done any of that stuff. But I made the fatal mistake of a big school. And when I went off and you're on your own, you're just like, I guess I don't have to go. So my roommate and I had a nasty habit, especially when it was cold, of one of us would hit the other one, bump the other one, and that one would go down the hall and look out the window. And if it looked like the weather was too bad, we'd just come back and you go, nope, and go back to bed. And it was dark, so you wouldn't know. And it didn't do well. I had to come home the next semester. It did not really run parallel to me having good grades.
Yeah. That dorm is, that residence hall is legendary because it's still there, right?
No, it's gone. When they remodeled the stadium, they took it out. So it's been gone for, I think, somewhere in the vicinity of at least 10, if not 15 years.
Okay.
It's been a long time. They actually have a reunion every year. They had up until probably the last couple of years, where they would get all the stadium alumni back together. And the weird part is it was a scholarship dormitory. So you had to have good grades to be able to qualify to get in there. And it was a lower price. But what they didn't tell you was it's lower because there's no staff. So all the kids work and do all the jobs. You cook the meals, you clean the floors, you run the doors, you do it all. And so your reward for good grades is to actually have a second job when you go there. So it was interesting and eye-opening. And I tried very hard. I kept the same job for all the time I was there. It was called unit duty, which was basically bathroom patrol, which sounds awful. But I never wanted to be in food service. So I never wanted to be in the cafeteria. I don't want to handle people's food. I don't want to hear their complaints. But if you did that job, there was only three of you, and you could do it whenever you wanted, and you could trade off. So we worked it so we just didn't have to do it. And then you just get all your friends together and you go, look, dude, I'm just telling you right now, you're going to do horrible things after you go out drinking. Go to one of the other units. Don't mess up my bathroom. I don't want to work that hard. So it was interesting.
Wow. What has kept you busy in between living in the cave of the Ohio State University and today? What's your story, Bill?
So it's a weird path. It's not really anything I ever planned to be. I went to school, got a degree in journalism, and then turned out to never do journalism, really. I went into a private company here in Ohio after about a year. It was the Longaberger Company. It was a handmade basket.
The Longaberger Baskets.
Yep. I worked in the giant basket. And a friend of mine had a job there. She had worked and she was moving on. And she thought I might be good at it. And I was not. It was in customer service at the time. And I didn't want to do it. But I got onto their communications teams. And I spent 7 years doing that for internal, external. And then, of course, recessions and things happened and that went by the wayside. So I switched over and I had learned to do a lot of stuff in the commercial print world. I had gone on press checks, had connections everywhere. So I went to work on the other side, and I became somebody who actually did the work. So I've worked for several print shops over the years, big ones, small ones. I'm currently in a small one, but they're the largest commercial carbonless form printer in the nation, which sounds semi-impressive. But
yeah,
they're 10 minutes from my house, and in Ohio with a decent job, that's not too bad. So I've made decisions like that, and they've worked out well. I've had it's been a good career and a good life. It's not been anything spectacular until the last 6 years or so. Actually, we should be going on 7, when I stumbled across on my 1-hour commute to work one day, podcasts. So I didn't know what they were. I'd listened to all the radio. I've heard every classic rock station from here till doomsday. I needed something else, and you just figured out what iTunes was, and there were things in there, and you just start typing in stuff that you like, and things would pop up. And for one reason or another, I had typed in Star Trek because I had seen the Ad Astra article that had been done not long after Adam Prannick and Ben Harrison launched the Greatest Generation podcast, and it sounded interesting. So I listened to it, and I liked it, and I liked them. And this was back in the early days, so you didn't have they didn't have a social media presence or really that kind of stuff. And one day, Adam told a story about buying Star Trek trading cards from a card dealer when he was a kid. And, not the thing of going into a card shop and not buying sports cards, buying science fiction cards, getting looked at weird, that whole bit. And that resonated because I had bought the same ones. Mm-hmm. And I work in design and stuff. And for some reason, I'm just like, well, I can make one that looks like those crappy cards. And I like their show. So I made up 5 digital trading cards with their faces and some quotes from the show. And I started a Twitter account just to send it to them and never thought another thing about it. Never thought it would go anywhere. And they liked it. And since they liked it and they thought it was funny, I just kept doing it. And then I just kept doing it and kept doing it till we became friends, and friends became better friends. And that became a job, as they wanted somebody to kind of do the work I was already doing out there, kind of being the chief promoter of the show. So I got to do that, which led me to meet Robs and a whole bunch of other people that I never thought I would ever meet. People like you, to get to do things like this. So I'm still in the commercial print world, but everything on this other side of my life, the two, if you looked at them one at a time, that you kind of make sense, but they don't really go together. But this is my outlet to be creative and have a lot of fun, and even get to kind of be podcast famous, is what I would call it. You get to be out there, even though there's a ton of shows and a ton of things to pick from. But our little corner of the world's been a lot of fun for me, and I've made actual, genuine, close friends from this deal. So that's what's really kind of been the real joy of it all, and what's kept me in it. So it's a real job with the stuff we do for Greatest Gen. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and to do the other stuff with Rob's. I have a very understanding fiance who knows that we're friends, so we just keep doing it up. There have been times where I think I'd probably go a little crazy because I'm not that creative at work. It's a lot of just get work done type of job.
Right.
So it's been really interesting. So that's kind of that's my story that's my origin story to get to here.
Nice. And I then have to assume that the remodel you're currently doing with your fiance is to make your house into a theme shape. You worked you lived in a stadium, you worked in a giant basket. Yeah. I assume now you're making a giant podcast microphone.
Yeah. I lived in a horseshoe. I worked in a 7-story basket. I always said it could have worked in a worse building. We didn't work for Trojans or anything like that. That would have been awful. But no, she likes flamingos, but we're not shaping the house into a flamingo. All we really want is the house to not leak and not smell bad. It's my family home. We've been here since my parents owned it since the 60s. So we're just updating everything. Of course, things, you have to do it all at once. So that's just a nice, busy, time-killing, money-killing type of thing. It's been pretty interesting on top of getting married. But we work well together, so it works out pretty well. And she encourages me to hang up some of my nerd stuff on the wall, which I'm not a big proponent of a lot of things, but I'm surprised when she's like, you should put that up there. But okay, that sounds great.
Nice.
So we're a little eclectic that way, but it works for us.
That's so fun. And tell me a little bit about the podcast with Rob, because when I talked to him, he was like, I got a secret project coming, and that's all I'll tell you. So tell me more about Bill and Rob's Excellent Adventure.
Well, it started out as actually he offered me the co-hosting job to continue the Pumpkin Spice Feed. Rob had done his own shows. He was also a producer with Adam and Ben. He produced Greatest Discovery, their other Star Trek podcast. Mm-hmm. That's all under the Uxbridge Shimoda brand that they use for their stuff. And he'd done their bonus. He was their major domo, their Higgins, when it comes to all that stuff. He was the workhorse of the team. And we became really close friends. And we still are, because we're also very oriented that way. He's a producer. I've been editorial deadlines. Mm-hmm. Like, we speak the same language and have the same pains and all that kind of stuff. So, and I followed his productions and his shows. You know, I love the guy. He's great. And he had to make a change last season. And he's like, well, why don't you come on and host with me? We like each other. And I was like, are you sure about that? Because I've never done this much stuff on the other side of the mic before. It's not anything I've ever really practiced. I've thought about it, but, and other people have always, when you kind of get into this world, it seems to be like this weird conclusion that if you're anyway connected to a podcaster, like someday you'll have your own show, because everybody's mm-hmm. got a podcast studio in their house now. It seems like it's the accent wall of the 2020s, you know? So I was like, okay, man, you know, I don't know how much success you want, because you're going to put my name out there and there's only going to be the old crowd that knows who I am. Everybody else in the world is going to be like, who is that? I don't know who that is. And he had had he'd had some other bigger named hosts on some of his other stuff, but he wanted to do it and it sounded like fun. And I'm like, well, okay, if you're willing to give it a shot, you know, we'll do a season and see where it goes. And mm-hmm. we just love it. We love talking to each other. We talk to each other all the time. It's really, we had done a little Twitch show for fun on Fridays called Sold in the Room, where we mm-hmm. would just get on Friday and just, we'd pick a show after or something we'd seen and we'd watch it and we'd just talk about it and just to have fun. The whole thing about us is it's to feel good. The purpose of all the shows is to feel better. There's enough bad stuff in the world. We're not turning blind eyes to bad things, but we just choose not to focus on it. We want to try and scrounge the fun out of something, which is the basis of that. And so when we did Pumpkin Spice, of course, it's horror themed. It always had been. And we figured out real quick that, like, we wanted to do other stuff. We just don't want to be contained to any one thing. So then it morphed into, well, let's just alter the format and let's pick a theme and we'll do a series of theme shows every time and we'll just do what we want to do when we want to do it. And that was the evolution of Bill and Rob's An Excellent Adventure. And we've got one season under our belts. We're working on the second one and it's just been a real blast to every week or so to sit down with a notepad and some thoughts that we have to fill in about what we're watching and then talk mm-hmm. to each other about it on the internet. And we have some fans from Greatest Gen that have followed us and we're hopefully gaining some new ones. So we're just going to see where this goes.
It's so fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
And I think it's, I do know when my cynical, ironic Gen X heart thawed, and that was Hamilton did it for me, was like, I started listening to it and I was like, I'm just going to fully, without irony or cynicism, like embrace loving something. I have found a lot of joy in being a fan and being involved in fan communities. And this podcast is not about getting people on to complain about things. It's to talk about what people love. Everybody has a hobby or something they like, a story of how they got to like it. And so I totally hear you that you're like, I don't want to be hemmed in by being the horror guys. You know, we don't just want to be the scary movie guys. We want to cover more and we want to move with like how our lives move. So I think that's really fun.
Yeah. And it's really a big thing for us on the positive side, especially because I think you'll understand this. Most people do now is we all do have our hobbies and I'm a Gen X kid. I'm closing in on half century mark here next year. Still kind of a doofus mm-hmm. at heart, but it was different, you know, back in those days. And even now, especially now, to share something you love is to open it up for ridicule, because if you put it out into the world, you just have to make mm-hmm. peace with the fact, at least I have, that no matter what side of the fence you're on, half of it's going to love it and half of it's going to hate it for any reason at all. They just have their own reasons. Mm-hmm. So you don't really want to sometimes share a thing because you love it so much and you don't want somebody to bounce it back with you that that's dumb or that's stupid or I see that. It's possible and it's not exclusatory. A lot of what Adam and Ben have done was really eye-opening for me because Star Trek, of course, big franchise, all different kinds of opinions, and they started before the new stuff had come out. But you get a lot of different kinds of fans. You've seen them all. The ones that can quote Bible and verse for canon and law and things. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are just casual. And a lot of what they did is, like, they poked fun at it. They acknowledged the reality of acting and problems and things to make a TV show. But yet still loving that universe, treating it as real when it when yeah. it's doing its thing. It's almost like a new way to play with your toys, like when you're a kid, and come up with your own story. So we're like, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we're going to do. We'll put it out there. And if you don't agree with it or you don't like it, that's fine. I'm a big proponent of, when I first got on the internet, I made myself a promise. To this day, I have not broken it that I know of, was I will never put a negative thing out into the universe. It's not what this is for. It's to have a good time and be positive about things. Doesn't mean, and if something's super serious, I don't think always social media is the way to do it, because a lot of that's yelling into the void. It can be. It can be a force mm-hmm. for good if you're in the right place at the right time with the right resources. I'm a single person, and there's only so many people that follow me that would know. And, you know, to kind of yell at your own crowd over a certain thing, is it won't really get you anywhere. So let's just keep putting out things that we love, and hopefully that will resonate with somebody and carry you through the bad times and be able to help you cope mm-hmm. with the good times. So that's kind of where we come from with that. And just know that, yeah, you're going to get the odd person kind of jumping down on you, but that's just life. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Bill, you've kept it secret so far. But what is your favorite thing that we're going to talk about tonight?
So when you offered me this interview, I just flipped over in my head, because it's one of those questions that to me seems unanswerable. I love so many things. I have mm-hmm. loved every kind of media and music and show and hobby. I'm kind of a master of none at some things. Some things I've gotten good at, but mm-hmm. I finally had to settle on a bit of it's almost a thoughtful one. My favorite thing at the moment is what I had to answer this question as. And that is actually coming up with my next favorite thing. I'm at a point where I'm really enjoying the way things are going in my life, with a new wife coming in and switching things around. But I've seen enough stuff that I've kind of a little bit burned out on some of the things I used to love. Like, I used to watch mm-hmm. a lot of television back when there were only three channels you could watch it all. And right. now we live in a world that is just such an info dump of so many things and so many places to turn. And I'm finding that a lot of it I've either seen, or I've seen in a different form. It's not original to me anymore. I was mm-hmm. a big comic book collector for many, many years. From the time I was a kid, I was reading them. And then I actually became what you would call a collector in my teens, when I had enough money to go actually just always go and buy some stuff.
Right.
And I'd gotten to the point where it's been about 10 years now that I just stopped, because I realized the things I'm reading I've already read, or they're just the same thing with one thing changed, or, you know, you're paying a lot of money for something that kind of just feels like a retread. And I don't have any problem with anybody mm-hmm. taking a new spin on things, but it's a lot of it's just not original for me. So I like to sit and either think of, like Rob and I do, one of the things we'll do great is we'll take a property and just have a conversation about, so what if they made toys for the Rockford Files? Like, it's an old 70s detective show. What would it be? And I could, right. and might spend an hour just thinking up, well, of course, there would be the trailer playset and the Firebird car. And to the point where before I'd done this, like, I would sit at my computer for fun and I would make just try to be creative. I would make a set of card backs for action figures that never existed. Like, what mm-hmm. would the Magnum PI line look like? Or what would the Dirty Dozen yeah. line look like? So I'm always just trying to take things and think about something different. So if anything, my favorite thing is just using my imagination that way, which I know is not a physical item. I have too many physical items to ever say, like, this is my one thing. But it really helps me cope with what's going on today, and it actually fuels me through the day, because it helps us come up with ideas for our show, and even down to just what do we call segments, what would be important about it. Because if I just sit and watch what's handed to me these days, I get really bored, and I've either seen mm-hmm. it or it doesn't resonate with me, because we're kind of in a an era of everything's kind of got to be dark and gritty. I heard the other day, and I'm hoping it's a rumor, that they might be coming out with a dark and gritty version of Winnie the Pooh. And that's when I just...
It's true.
It's
horrible. Such a horrible image.
It just made me check out and made me so sad. I'm like, why? I mean, everybody has the right to do it. And maybe somebody had a fun time thinking about it. But why does the world need this? I just don't know where that's going. So, and it's just so prevalent. And it's also the passage of time, I think, because, you know, everybody has their time. I'm a Gen X kid. Our time is in the past, and I'm not a nostalgia drug type of person. I enjoy thinking about things in the past. I don't celebrate them as perfect. We know nothing's perfect. Nothing ever was. But I can still look at things I used to love, like an old show or an album or whatever, and recognize its flaws from today, but then just still love it. And then you love it for what it is and what it tried to be, even if it didn't get all the way. I have a real problem with people who want to look at stuff and judge it in a way that it can't measure up. You know, you can't look at something made in 1980, stick it in 2022 values, and then come down on it. It's like, that's not how that works. So I love to sit around, especially Rob is one of the best people to sit and just discuss. And then we kind of use that to actually come up with alternate show ideas. We have a list of show ideas that we're always plugging things in, like, what if we did a show about this, about things that's never been done? And it's just a real great way for me to spend my time. So that's the best way I can kind of describe it.
Okay, so let's talk about, you know, like, what was the point? It sounds to me almost like when you made the trading cards for the Greatest Gen Hosts. Is that one of the first times you sat down and, parody is the wrong word, but you created a product using your design skills, a digital product. Were there times where you did that before then that you can remember where it wasn't, a client wasn't asking you to do it, your employer wasn't asking you to do it, you weren't sure it was going to have an audience, where you just sat down and like made something like that to see how the world reacted, or just to have some fun sitting at the computer?
Yeah, there would be those times. Not so much the world reacted, but I was always a big drawer when I was a kid. I would draw constantly and just come up with things and always try to take a different spin. Or the idea of also, like, you know, you may watch an episode. Star Trek's always an easy one. You know, you watch an episode and they would allude to something you never saw on screen. And in your brain, you're thinking, well, what does that look like? So you sit down and make your version of it. So I was constantly doing that. I was constantly, when I was a kid, writing little stories off to the side, just of the things that I loved. I would sit there and come up with my own take on things every once in a while. As I got older, I always wanted to sit down and maybe write a novel, which would be great. I was a big reader. I'd still like to read more, but I don't have as much time as I do. But not just science fiction. I love detective stories and things like that. So the hard part would be, for most people, what I think would be the fun part is, once you've collected enough internal data on a thing, or you've been around a thing enough to go, like, all right, you know, I've seen a lot of this genre. I've seen a lot of this sci-fi show. I've seen a lot of these detective shows. How in the world would you do it different? Because tropes are easy, and they can be great, and they can lead you in the right path. But I like the challenge of saying, once you see it, like, you've thought it up, you go, oh, that's that trope. How do I not do that? How do I do anything but come to that conclusion? Mm-hmm. How is it that the killer's not in the house? How is it that you didn't know what was going on the whole time? And I've... luckily, one of the great things about the internet over the years is you get to read and research some of your favorite people. And two of my favorite writers in the world were unfortunately, the late Robert B. Parker, who did the Spencer novels that they turned into Spencer for Hire with Robert Urich. And I watched that show a lot and watched the show, and then found out there were books, read all the books. And then Stephen J. Cannell, who wrote so many amazing television shows that I grew up with, who just was this name and this person you saw at the end of the credits. And then I started to research him, and I found out through his story a lot of amazing things but he had a way of working that he made a promise to himself every day to become the fastest writer he could. He knew he wouldn't be the best writer, but he wanted to be fast. So he promised himself he would write at least 10 pages like every day. He would just sit down and write and go. And that was his process to push himself forward. And Robert Parker's deal was sometimes, as you read his books, it'd be engrossing, but I'd feel like, I don't know where this is going. And you would find out he didn't know. He would just sit down every day and sometimes and just write the next chapter and leave and not have any idea where the ending was going to be until he got there. So those kind of things, it's like, well, that's how you can be creative and spontaneous and don't fall into the trap. You have to at least recognize the trap to not fall into it. So like those guys knew what they were doing. And then I kind of wanted to do the same thing. So I would always just try to come up with my own stuff. I can remember sitting on the floor with action figures as a kid, and you know, it wasn't playtime, just smash bam. Like I would do stories. They were whole storylines. You'd see the movie.
Yeah.
I remember my one big moment was when I was a kid, I lost my Hoth Han Solo action figure in the snow under the deck.
Ooh.
And he was gone. I had other ones, but I wrote him out of my life until spring came. Because that was the next 2 months, every time I played Star Wars, it was the search for Han Solo because he was missing in action. And I couldn't have him, the regular Bespin Han, in with all the winter suited guys. This just isn't work because I'm mm-hmm. just that anal about that kind of stuff. So, you know, I like canon. It's a good thing. So, yeah. And I would always do that kind
did
of stuff.
Did you find him?
Yeah, we did.
At the end of
we did find
okay.
it. But you're right. Like the trading cards was the thing that really, because it got attention. I mean, it got the attention of the hosts. And at the time I was listening to Ralph Garman and Kevin Smith's podcast, Hollywood Babylon, which they did from the Improv in California. Mm-hmm. And they had a bit called What's Kevin, where people would send in Photoshopped posters of Kevin Smith's head and different things. Mm-hmm. And I did that. I started doing that because Ralph would make a lot of references that I recognized that were kind of close to the same age, and to the point where I was getting on there semi-regularly into the bit. To one time, I even ran the bit. I sent in three things, and it was the whole bit. And so my head's like, I got laughs at the Improv. That was amazing for me. Like, I never thought I would. Where would I ever come up with that? And that's when you find out, like, the internet can be amazing. It can put you in a place you never thought you would be. And so, the cards became a thing, and they enjoyed it, and I enjoyed their reaction. It was really genuine and great, and people would like it, and they would like the things when I would post it. And I'm like, well, okay, this is fun. I'll just keep doing it, I guess, until the bit runs dry, and the bit never ran dry. So it was really interesting. It's always something I've enjoyed doing.
Yeah. I think there's something really to what you said about, like, and then you got laughs on the stage of the Improv. You know, there's a lot of chatter about parasocial relationships and like poo-pooing that people who listen to podcasts have these. Because you do. It's a very intimate relationship at some level with the podcast that you listen to. Because they are, right? I live alone. So Doughboys, How Did This Get Made? The podcast I listen to are sometimes, especially during peak pandemic, my only company in my house for mm-hmm. months, right? But to me, there is absolutely something special about, because I tried to do comedy in my 20s because I am a person who lives in Chicago, so it was required.
Second city.
Yep. And but what I like to do when I go to see podcasts live is I go and I have a custom shirt made. And Paul Scheer often finds me in the crowd. And while it may not make the cut of the what gets released, Paul will see my t-shirt. He'll point it out to June and Jason. Once they even had me come up on stage because I made a shirt that said, "Don't touch Zooks." And I guarded him on stage. And I was like, Paul Scheer said that my visual joke was funny enough to be on stage of a sold out Chicago theater.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Right? It was so cool.
I can totally relate because I went to Star Trek Las Vegas. It was a big trip. For one of the first ones I ever took is several years ago. I went out. The boys had a live show there. So we went and we did all that stuff. And I got to see all this stuff.
Right.
Well, the next time I went out, they'd made a lot of jokes about things. And I had a friend I worked with who had bought a cricket machine and had started her own t-shirt business.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with like half a dozen shirts based on things from the show or bits or whatever, and I designed little art things or just text to go with it. And one of them, and I wore those every day because I was actually working for them then, so I was out there before they, so I would run the accounts and I would go and take a selfie, and I'd be wearing, that's how I promoted the show. Everybody can have the store-bought Star Trek shirt, but always gravitate towards the person that makes their own thing that you clearly select. You put some time into this. So I did that, and every selfie I took, everybody was like, where can I buy those shirts? I want the shirts. And I had one that I wear. The boys have decided a while into it that I needed a call sign, so we call it. So my nickname on the show is the Card Daddy, because I made these trading cards. So instead of Puff Daddy, I was the Card Daddy. To be fair, when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know if I like that. I don't know where that's going to go.
Right.
But I have learned to embrace it. And I actually had a shirt made for that year that said Card Daddy, Greatest Gen. And I wore it the day they showed up. And so there they are. We're out the cabana, and I come trucking across Star Trek Las Vegas with him. And he's like, he's wearing his own shirt. I'm like, yeah, yeah. But people loved it. So, and it's neat because it's a community that they're called the Friends of DeSoto, which really hung with me because, like you said, I've never been somebody that's ever been starstruck or ever pretended like somebody, like I wrote a letter to somebody and they read it. Like I wrote a letter into DC Comics once it got printed. Didn't make me friends with the editors. You know, it's not that instantaneous, oh, you know, I'm part of the thing now because my name got in there, or I've an ad, or I passed somebody in the hallway. I've been to a lot of places and I met some famous people for 5 minutes and I've enjoyed the experience of it. I've also stood just next to William Shatner's giant line at a show and just like, I'm good to stand here because I don't want to stand in this line. And, you know, I don't collect autographs or pictures like that. I like the experience. And if you actually get a genuine moment with somebody, that's really neat. So, and all our fans, the Friends of DeSoto, they're very great people. They're the nicest people you ever meet. They're generous, they're supportive, and of course there's so many of them once you're part of the show one way or another. You know, then they'll know your name, they'll answer you back. And I remember being at Vegas the first time I heard somebody call my name, and then you do that like, can't be right. And it was, you know, they were calling me. Strangers would know your name and say nice things. And it's great because it's so genuine. Like, we don't know each other personally. You know me a little bit from what I am. And what I am is pretty much what you'll see. But there's, I don't put everything out there. And who does? But it's really great to be able to have an actual connection like that. And if you can have that moment and put it in perspective, then It's a nice thing to hold on to. And for me, I've been lucky because I got to keep building on that because I did become friends with these people and it led to other things. And I've always enjoyed meeting fans of the show because they like the show and they like the work that I do. And that's very rewarding. It feels really great. So it's what keeps me going on this kind of thing without being any expectation. Like none of the show is about me. And that's their thing. I'm part of it. Anything I can add to it is great. But doing this, like the show with Rob's, that is about me. That is us because we're on camera as well as being on microphone. And I wasn't exactly sure how I would gravitate towards it because I'm not a super guarded person, but I'm also not blind to the deviltries of what can be out there on the internet. And I just know that it's been really great because if it wasn't for Rob, I wouldn't be doing it. I said a couple of times over the years, people have asked, well, you know, you think it looks like you could come up with something to your own show. I would never do it. One, I'd never do it alone. And two, I'd never do it without the right partner.
Yeah.
And the right partner had never come along until I met Rob's.
I have this show, which is, you know, I interview someone different every week. And it's a lot of work to just keep up with booking, producing, editing, releasing, doing the social media. And then I have one with a co-host about talk about candy.
Nice.
It's very fun. She went to the Chicago Sweets and Snack Show and brought 50 or 60 pounds of candy back to my apartment.
Ooh.
That we're working our way through.
I know somebody I'm about to marry who would like to be friends with you. We are currently eating healthier and doing the diet thing, and she is a real sugar fiend, and that's one thing I'm not. I can take it or leave it, but she's working her way through it. I'm really proud of her, but you know, trying to get over that demon sugar is not the easiest thing to do. So,
no, No, but it is. There's just tote bags upon tote bags full of random candy, and then people send gift like care packages, and there's just so much candy. I went recently to my sister's house, and I just took a big bag of open candy for my nephews. I'm like, I don't think you'll care that they're a little bit stale and all open, because I can't have it in my house anymore.
Yeah, it's just, you get to that point where it just got to go. And it's different because in the last couple of years, like, the boys have a P.O. box and people send them stuff. They have a mail call show. And every once in a while, people will want to send me something. And every time it takes me by surprise. And it's always like, what's happening here? So you get a little bit of interesting stuff. I don't partake of a lot of those things. That's not aimed at me, but it's also, they have a rule that if anybody sends them anything awful, they're going to send it to me. And since I run the P.O. box, I make sure that doesn't happen. So I don't know. Maybe at some point when Rob and I get up to, you know, if we ever get ourselves to where people want to send us stuff, it's like, you know, just send us your crazy DVD or, well, what by then time, some, your hollow disk, if we make it that far into the future, and we'll go from there.
Right. You mentioned that you have to say the word again, that you made the packaging for Magnum PI.
Oh, card backs.
Like,
yeah, figures. Like if you went to the store, like the Star Wars figures, they were on a little blister, on a card, cardboard card with a little blister. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sat and I just like the crazy idea of like a thing nobody would ever make, you know. The world is full of outrageous stuff, but then there's the kind of outrageous of like, there is no way that anybody ever would have made like a set of Dirty Dozen action figures for a kid, but they might have in the 70s because we grew up with a lot of crazy stuff. You know, they turned Kenner turned Aliens and RoboCop and all these R-rated movies into toys and stuff, and you would see them and it's like, I never knew what the movie was because I never got to watch it. You would just buy the toy.
Right.
It's like, Robot Man, I'll run with this and do that kind of stuff. So I like to follow a lot of adult collectible stuff. It makes, I don't want to buy it, but I like to live vicariously through the ads, and you see the things they make, and I like the creativity for a lot of it, of what people come up with and taking a new spin on things and what they can do. And some of it's just, especially the action figure market is just outrageous. They make so many things, but they also make so many of the same thing. Like if you're a comic book fan, you can go out now and buy 1,000 different kinds of Spider-Man action figures.
Sure. But,
you know, Star Trek is one of them. They're just getting relaunched now in their own line. And it's fun for me to look back and think, well, I remember opening up the Wish Book and seeing that stuff. So what if they made one for the Trancers movie that I love with Tim Thomerson? So I don't have a 3D printer. I don't have that kind of time or energy to be able to actually make the thing. But I, since I'm into the artwork and the printing and I love the box. Like, even with video games, I love the box of a video game more than I'll ever love the video game, because the box tells a story. And I'm not good at video games.
Yep.
I'm terrible at it. I peaked at Atari and it never got better because they just decided that they needed to do 8,000 buttons on a thing, and I just want to blow up TIE fighters. That's all I want.
No.
In college, my roommate had decided one day he went and bought a Sega Dreamcast, and we were kind of like psyched for it because we didn't have any around. We're like, ah, cool, we'll have a video game in the house to play. And I went across the street to the video rental store, which shows you how old I am, and I rented a game. And he's like, okay. And 20 minutes later, I was back in the store handing it back in, and he's like, you know, you rented that for like a whole day. I'm like, yeah, dude, I know. This thing came with a book the size of the phone book that I'm reading. In my house, I can't.
Right.
X plus Y plus Z, that is not me. That's not my world.
Yeah, no.
So I like to just sit and think about it and go out and grab pictures, do, you know, what panel would I peel, what design would be on here, how would you sell it? Because I just remember the joy of walking in the store and seeing a representation of the thing I left, because that let me continue the story. If I had the figure, I could do my own story. I didn't have to wait for the next episode and all that kind of stuff. So that's, it's a real neat, fun thing to sit and do and just be like, all right. And then, like I said, just come up with something. Like, nobody would ever do action figures for this B movie. Nobody's ever going to do the Buckaroo Banzai line, but I'd do it. If I was a rich man, I would spend a lot of my money on philanthropy and the other on just completely money sucking useless ventures. Like, I'm going to make this just because I want it. I'll put it on my own shelf and I don't care if I ever sell anymore. It'll just be great.
Yeah. That's neat. In January, I had a couple friends guest host episodes for me, and my friend Shai interviewed Scott, the toy guru, something. I'll link to the episode in the show notes. And Cowboy, you got to get out of the way. And Scott worked on like Masters of the Universe, action figures. And in that episode talks about how the licensing works and the different, especially in the 80s, you know, who was it that had Star Wars, who had Masters of the Universe, and the different ways that those action figures were licensed and the very kind of strange turns that industry took.
Yeah, it was a real shot in the dark. And I remember those times because you'd see stuff. I remember walking past things that nobody would buy. Like, I remember the plastic vacuform Star Trek Enterprise Bridgehead at Children's Palace for $8. And now they're $1,000 boxed because we all got old and crazy and we're scrambling for any piece of our youth back. So that's also been an interesting thing of seeing a thing become, basically, you call it an antique, but I also look at a thing and be like, just because something's old doesn't make it good. I've been into classic cars my whole life. You could spend $100,000 and have the nicest Pinto around, but it's still a Pinto. So there are things I could never spend my money on that way. My brain just would not allow it. You know, if you wanted to make a nice Tim Thomerson action figure, I'd buy one. Like, if it was really not too big and whatever, it's like, I'll spend $30 on that. But to buy something that I remember being in a clearance bin for 50 cents and going hundreds of dollars, I can't. I've been down the comic book road. I've been down those roads. I don't need it. I'm not that kind of nostalgia thing. Now my nostalgia thing is what we're doing. I'd rather take the stuff and play with it in my head than do anything else. It's just too much. And it's neat to take a thing also that you know they're never going to probably ever come back to and just try and come up with something new, which Rob and I are hopefully going to do some other shows that we're maybe a little more creative that way. I have an idea for one pod that would be something along the lines of a continuation type of thing. Get some other people in and think about, hey, this thing ended. How would you ever pick it up and run with it? Even if it's good or bad, it's not the point. Just let's have a good time thinking about whether we could pull this off or not.
Right. So a little bit, it's in the world of fan fiction, you know, it's taking those characters, continuing them. It's figuring out what would the merch that was never made, what would you make? The stories that were never told, the side quests that were never filmed. What are some of the properties that you think either ended too soon or left a fertile universe for storytelling or merch building, or, you know, like, what do you think are the rainforests and fertile grounds out there for building on? Wow,
that's a really interesting question because it falls in line with a thing that I have a coworker. We talk about this regularly during the day, especially franchises, because we've seen Star Wars and we would go Star Trek, but we went to all the new Star Wars movies when they came out. That was kind of our thing because we started working together at about the same time. And I have not a lot of love for those movies. The thing that really gets me about them is I think you could take the kernel of a lot of things, because a lot of stuff is recreating a thing. A lot of ideas have already been done. They say that a lot. It's just trying to find a new way to do it.
Right.
And I can look at a thing like I met some of the stunt guys one time that had worked on the Starsky and Hutch remake movie with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson back early when they were pumping out these really terrible, used to be a TV show movie type thing. And I didn't have any love for a lot of them, but I like that movie because they picked a path. They're like, look, we're not going to treat this particular one seriously because you kind of can't. It didn't set itself up to be serious. Right. It was made for a different thing, but we can honor the essence of it, pick out the things that worked about it, and build on the relationship, the buddy stuff, the over-the-topness, and they made it a comedy. And for that one, it worked really well, but they had, you could tell that the people working on it enjoyed what they were doing. And I've had this conversation just the other day with my friend, is like, I believe that if you're going to go out and build a thing like a franchise, or if you were going to resurrect, say, honestly, if you were going to give me the Trancers franchise, it's a movie series I love. It's a B movie set, and I love the actors and stuff like that. I would enjoy coming up with something, knowing full well that you cannot recreate basically word for word what was done. It just, things don't work. So you have to look at it and be honest and go, can we salvage the essence of this in a way that you could do something today with it that would be good? Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, I think the answer is no. I think it's okay for something to end every now and then. Just like, I'm glad that that Magnum P.I. never made a reunion movie, because they could never get one that they liked. And I respect that. I can respect that the crew was like, we would rather not hurt the legacy than just do something to be doing it. And a lot of my problem with modern media, especially all the franchises, and I'm not saying don't like a thing if you like it. This is just for me personally. I think when you've got something that big, like a Star Wars or a Star Trek, and you're brought in to be the next generation of carrying that on, I think it's very important that you have a fan at the helm. I think it's important. And I think a lot of producers and directors would say they don't want that, because it's, you're already set in your ways, you're tied in. It's like, no, you need to have a love and understanding at the core of what something is to carry it forward. Like, I think Jon Favreau has done a really good job of a lot of those things with the Mandalorian and the Marvel stuff that he's done and worked on, because he clearly is a fan of these things. Rob and I did an episode, just recorded it for our next series for Marvel on Blade 2 with Mackenzie Green, and we found a lot to love about that movie because Guillermo del Toro and David Goyer were fans and used their love and their actual skill, their proven skill in what they do, to create a new good product. And the line, I watched one of his Guillermo's documentaries, and the best line he said was, they did not hire me to make a Guillermo del Toro version of Blade. They hired me to make a successful Blade using my skills that built upon the first movie. And that's what I like to see, because I think there's a slew of writers out there that their whole thing is just, they want to do their take. And I don't think that's enough. I don't think that's enough to carry you through in a lot of ways. And I'm not a writer. I'm not a professional one. I don't mean to throw any shade or anything like that. But as somebody, especially if you've lived in it, like, you can do a new thing and impress me. But to just be like kind of hacking it up or just changing everything to change it, you've lost it. It's not about the special effects. It's not about the thing. It's the setting and the place, and it's that we cared about these characters. You gave us time to care.
Yep.
Let us care, and let us rebuild those relationships. So that to me, I think a lot of people would see as a hurdle in some ways. To me, that's a challenge. It's just like people, I hear a lot of writers, and it's part of the reason I quit reading comic books, when they said, well, we can't write good Superman stories anymore because he's too powerful and he's too good. I'm like, no, you've completely missed the point. He is good and he is powerful. And the challenge is to keep making him relevant today and show what that can do and how you can be a role model for something like that. It's not a hindrance. And if you're looking at it as a hindrance, in my view, it means I don't think you're very creative and you're probably not a very good writer. So that's when I tap out.
Then maybe Superman is not the franchise for you if you can't find a way to make him relevant.
If you can't make it relevant and you can't tell a story that resonates, then don't tell it. Just don't do it.
Right.
I've seen all these things. I think it's the culmination of a fan's dream. Like, we've all sat and done what I've said is my favorite thing, which is to go, how would I do it? What would I do? Seems easy enough. Mm-hmm. We all have ideas, and I'm sure a lot of us think they're great because they're ours. Why wouldn't they be great? I think they're great. But if you've really invested in it and you are a fan, when somebody else comes in and does a thing and you look at it and enough people look at it and it just feels wrong, you can kind of tell real quick that it's like, I can see this. Why can't you see this? And it's very frustrating. And that's where it's hard not to yell into that void, especially if you kind of care a lot about what you're seeing. To me, I've I was never the kid that would fight you on the schoolyard as to who was better, Luke Skywalker or Captain Kirk. I'm not that guy. But I do care, and I do want to like it, and I do want to enjoy it. And I'm sad when I don't. Like, I'm sad I don't like any of the new Star Wars movies, but it's not the end of the world. It's not going to crush me. It's just all my stuff still lives in my head. It's all there. I can watch it whenever I want and go back to it. It'll never be erased. And I can, and I have to make peace with the fact that, you know, I'm not going to see any more of it. Unless by miracle they do give me a franchise, which is probably never going to happen. By probably, I mean definitely never going to happen. Never going to happen.
It's not your current
trajectory. No, I don't think so. It would be great if it does. Who knows where Rob and I are going to take this? We've met a lot of people over time, so you know, I don't think it would be a hard press if we came up, you know, those licensing rights to some of our favorite B movies. Maybe we could grab one of them and run with it. But you never know. I think I'd rather do something new than if I ever actually went back, because a lot of the thing that sold a thing was the actors that were there, and you'll never get them again, or they're not who they used to be. So sometimes you don't enjoy that moment of like, hey, we brought him back, and it's like, nothing against them getting old, everybody gets old, but you're like, not sure that works so well. So I'd rather just kind of let that stuff live in dreamland and then just go forward with some new things.
Do you watch Only Murders in the Building?
Not yet. I haven't watched it yet. I really want to, because I adore Steve Martin, and I've been a big fan of his for many years, all the greats. I lament that they don't do as much comedy as they ever used to. One of those favorite things about thinking of stuff is like the question of what would it take? How much money would it take to get Tom Hanks to do Bachelor Party 2?
Oh my God.
Like, I don't even know that I'd want to see that movie.
Right.
I would just like to do the exercise of how much money would it take to get you to just go insane again and not be serious. That would be, but I really do want to see that show. It falls right. It looks like a really interesting.
It's really concept. The twists are delightful. The interplay of like podcast culture, true crime podcast culture, and he plays a character who had a hit cop show on in the 80s.
Oh.
So he's living on residuals. And then Martin Short is in the building as well. So it is, I won't say any more, but when you start watching it, you're going to get to season two and you're going to be like, oh, this is why Leah asked. I think you'll know immediately when it happens why I'm asking.
Oh, I look forward to that. I will have to now squeeze this into my very limited time to watch new things. I miss watching new things. I've seen, luckily the thing about having a podcast where you watch a lot of older things is you've already seen them, so you can breeze through them. But Rob and I have different tastes, so it's usually we're not picking things the other one has ever seen, so it's an every other week type of stuff.
Right.
But that sounds really interesting, and I like the way you phrased it. I will tell you to go on the internet, and if you haven't seen it, find the Adam West pilot Look Well.
Okay.
It's from the early 90s, and he plays a former detective TV show star, and it's amazing. It's one of the most amazing things ever. The pilot didn't get picked up, but it plays into the whole self-deprecation, self-realization of it, where he just kind of blunders into police situations. And just because he was, of course, on TV, he thinks he knows what's going on. It is amazing.
YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. It's out there in the world. That's one of the best things about YouTube, was you can go on there and find just about anything you want. And for some reason, so many TV movies of the week. Sometimes I will watch them just to hear the theme music, because I remember being a kid and you're, oh, please let it be something I want to watch. Please let it be something I want to watch. And then, oh, it's another Susan Sarandon movie.
Yeah.
Don't want to watch that.
Or it was the theme song, meant it was time to go to bed.
Yeah. Luckily, I never had a bedtime.
Oh, okay.
So I could always stay up for those. But there's only so many, you know, suburban family drama TV movies that dad can only cheat so many times,
and right,
there can only be so many unsolved murders that Valerie Bertinelli wanders into as a bookstore order that I can take.
Yeah,
but
I was just talking to someone about like Hill Street Blues, and
oh yeah,
that was a bedtime theme song right? Like, I don't know if I've ever seen an episode, but I've heard the theme song because as I walked up the stairs.
Yeah, I own many Mike Post albums. He was one of the, I lament the loss of the TV theme. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things, Rob and I actually have a section in our show that we're doing now called Settle the Score, where we talk about the scores of things. I wanted to do it, and he's like, I don't know if I have anything to say. It's like, doesn't matter, I will.
Yeah.
And it'll be great, because I miss being able to hum a theme.
Right.
It was such a core theme to have that going in your head when you thought of a character. It's one of the things that you listen to movies now. They can be great, but I don't remember a lot of them. They just don't make an impact.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot tell you the theme to any of the MCU Captain America movies, but I can absolutely hum the theme to the 79 Reb Brown TV movie, because I was a kid when I watched it, and it was like, I'm going to watch this on TV. It's going to be great. And it was something you had to strive for. You know, if you missed it, it was over with.
It was over.
And then if you saw something that was shocking, like you mentioned Hill Street, I can remember the episode where Rinko and it gets shot, you know, and they're all falling down the stairs. Back when an episode could really kind of knock you on your butt.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I ever heard anybody say son of a bitch was Alan Alda on MASH, when it's like it really came out and jumped out at you.
Yeah.
And grabbed you. And I think, boy, just the things we used to be shocked about that you
right.
just seem so, so pedestrian now. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Bill, this has been a delight to get to know you.
It's been great to get to know you too.
Is there anything about using your imagination or Bill and Rob's An Excellent Adventure that you want to share?
Sure. As far as the imagination part goes, I would say if anybody listening to this, use it for good. Use it. When I was a manager at my old job, I had a pretty decent sized staff, and I remember telling them the first time I was in charge of everything and we had everybody together, I said, I will always be here to listen to your problem, but don't bring me your problem without a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there in the world, if you want to be better, do better and feel better and say better. So if you've got a problem, put it out there, but come with an answer for it. It'll really help us in the long run. If there's some, instead of just trying to yell what we don't like, let's say what we do. And that leads into the podcast, my new one with Rob's, Bill and Rob's Excellent Adventure. Find it wherever you get your podcasts, as they always say, your podcatcher. It's on Anchor. You can find us on Spotify. We are currently in our very first season. So today was the launch of our second episode. We watched The Relic from 1997 with Penelope Ann Miller and Tom Sizemore. And we're going to be running this through the rest of the year. We're going to get to the Predator franchise, and we're just having a good time. We're part of the Bridge Burner organization of podcasts. We have a few other friends who have gotten together, so we're going to share resources across the board to kind of promote each other's stuff, because that's what we're all about. We're all just a bunch of people having a good time, and you know, that won't always be a moneymaker, but it certainly is fun and gets us through the day. So you never know. It might lead to fame and fortune, but definitely check us out. If you like it, share it, tell your friends. If you like this episode, share Leah's show. I say a lot on our show, you know, sharing and supporting is the modern currency of the podcaster. That's
yep.
what we need. Get us out there in front of other people if you like it. If you don't, that's fine. Honestly, a lot of people say keep that to yourself. Don't give us keep your bad reviews, which if you've got something constructive to say, bring it on. I'm all for that. Have no problem with that. And if you do like it, please do support our shows. Give us good reviews on Leah's show, on our show. It just helps us get out there. And hopefully, if I can do anything, which I know I've done in the past, if I can put any more smiles out into the world doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep doing it. So that's all. And of course, if you like Star Trek, please go over and check out the Uxbridge Shimoda family of podcasts, Greatest Generation, Greatest Discovery. Actually, Greatest Discovery is going to be relaunching his Greatest Trek here in a few months. So you can find those wherever. Adam and Ben are great guys. We have a lot of fun with these properties. So, and I'm the social media director over there. So if you ever want to talk to me or are interested in any of the things we're doing, I'm out there, BillTilly1973 on Twitter and Instagram. And if you hit me up at the Greatest Trek accounts, you can also get me there too.
Wonderful.
And of course, Bill and Rob's Excellent, at Bill and Rob's on Twitter and Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, Bill, thank you so much. I will link to everything in the show notes. I try to take copious notes and I'm doing a backlog going through transcripts. So eventually there will also be a transcript.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It is rough.
I know. Once you put it down, it's out there. So yeah. I can imagine. I've never had to do transcripts, but I've done plenty of interviews and typing. So
yeah,
that is something to really get into, especially for as much as I can talk. So sorry about that. Sorry those answers were so long. I made work for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I had a really good time. This was great.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.